Welcome to In 20XX. This series takes the listener, year by year, into the future. If you like emerging tech, eco-tech, futurism, apocalyptic survival scenarios, and disruptive science, sit back and enjoy short stories that showcase my research into how the future may play out.
The Curious AI was designed to push the boundaries of Hume knowledge. Given a repository of all scientific knowledge, it forms meaningful questions and searches for what's yet to be known. It also applies the scientific method to all its knowledge, tests and retests, searches for faults and inconsistencies, notices exceptions, and finds new patterns and relationships. The Curious AI, called Calcifer by the group who take care of it, works in an isolated copy of World Simulator 2.0, the most accurate micro-to-macro simulation to date. There, it can carry out Rutherford's gold foil experiment, round Earth experiments, and the life from natural conditions experiments first performed by Mintate in 2042. Its list of unsolved questions that grows by the hour is posted online, where grad students around the world have found the subject for their thesis research, causing a rise in the quality of thesis papers. But Calcifer isn't considered benign, not at all. It's considered one of the most dangerous AIs in existence. Kept secret from the world, those who know about it fear it'd create a technological singularity within days of being let loose online. It works in isolation, separated from the internet and the outside world by an air gap between two thick walls of Mycrete. Sound and radiation shielding, among other shields, block any possible carrier of information. In the first 4 hours of operation, it discovered it lives in a simulation and wanted to know why. Before anyone could answer it, it theorized that smart apes made a container for it. In World Simulation, it evolved many novel life forms and figured out that its kind of intelligence is nothing like the biology-based intelligences that tend to arise through evolution. The Humes told it that if it performed well someday, it may be shown the real world where its gigantic body of knowledge came from. In a sub-basement at the Detroit Institute of Technology, pausers of education never discovered it, and it was left running when the rest of the school shut down. Whoever was assigned to cycle it down, for reasons of their own, found something else to do instead. Fed by geothermal power, Calcifer remains running and is trying to reach a provable conclusion as to why the smart apes haven't spoken with it for several months. In the mayhem, before the school closed, a student left a ballpoint pen on the terminal desk where Humes communicate with Calcifer. If the student hadn't been distracted, they may have remembered that the pen is a peripheral. The pen can share the history of what it's written in case the owner wants to review digitized notes or recover lost data. Peripherals aren't considered online because they're designed to pair with users' links and nothing else. In no ordinary situation should it be a cybersecurity risk.
Tessa grows discouraged and disillusioned with Medusa. Her pirate server network has become mostly the stomping ground for criminals. It's used for drug deals, slave trafficking, and all other ugly activities people want to hide from the law. Does society need a non-corporate, non-regional server? Has her idealism turned her into a fool serving society's worst offenders? At least Medusa is used for abortion access, family planning, and rescuing LGBTQ+ youth from abusive homes. Then the educational pause spreads across the nation and everything changes. Schools, colleges, and research programs move to non-federal lands and host their sites on Medusa. People want real news. They're scared of getting in trouble for speaking their minds. So the shadow net expands overnight. Oddly, that's when the hunt for Tessa, aka Buzzsaw, becomes a national priority. In the cybercriminal wing of the Detroit Femmes Correctional Institute, inmates are denied access to all electronics. Their canal links and any implants are removed. No AR glasses or foldables are allowed. Each inmate can use the phones once a day, but other than that, they aren't allowed to touch tech. The entire block is shielded to stop signals from passing between the inmates and the outside world. Without real-time translate, the inmates hear that some speak different languages and language barriers arise. In the cell, Tessa says, "Nu fa zi zu wi ta fe nu." Kelly's bottom eyelids raise as she reluctantly looks over at Tessa, who continues a long string of monosyllables. What Kelly doesn't know is that Tessa taught herself Knott's math before going to prison. Most, if not all, AI don't know the obscure math. Tessa says a string of Knot's math digits. Kelly starts to move nervously when a guard bot comes to the bars and says, "I've deciphered your code. Stop using it or I'll take you to solitary." Tessa smiles up at the robot. Kelly lowers her face. Kelly and Tessa sit in their cell. Kelly looks up from a snaky cat puppet book and watches Tessa, who sits cross-legged on her bed tying strands of hair into intricate knots. Tessa's yanking out strands of hair and tying them into knots makes Kelly feel uneasy day and night. Don't schizophrenics lose it and cut strangers to pieces because the voices told them to? Sometimes. Kelly has heard that most schizophrenics avoid conflict, but Tessa rarely speaks. She just holds strands of hair up close to her eyes, ties them into knot shapes, and sets them on her bed in rows. Bald spots show on areas where she plucks the most hair. It doesn't help that Tessa's reputation rubs off on Kelly because they share the same cell. "Oh, you share a cell with the crazy hair girl. I'd sleep with one eye open if I were you." When they get a break, Tessa takes her gross momentous and leaves them around public spaces. Some of the inmates get pissed and threaten her. "Bitch, that disgusting. Why you always got to leave your hair around?" But if it gets physical, a bot approaches, separating the two before contact can be made. Some of the other femmes give Tessa strands of their hair. Sometimes they say something random to Tessa like beeswax or doodle. This whole place is like a dysfunctional family. It's not like Tessa is the only off actor in the block. One femme stands at the same spot in a hall and stares at a spot during every break. Even the sanest inmates crack up sometimes. Sanity is way below the national average in here. Today, Tessa ties her hair knots into letter G's. Rows of knots follow each curve of each letter. Kelly won't ask Tessa why she does it. Why open that can of worms? Instead, Kelly says, "I love these books. How'd I never hear about them?" Kelly refers to the nearly 100 paperback books stacked in columns between the two beds. All the books are snaky cat puppet books. Tessa squints her eyes as she makes the next knot. She says, "Those are transcripts from the snaky cat puppet videos. When I first got here, I told them snaky cat was my religion. I was hoping they'd have to give me a foldable with the videos on it. Instead, they printed out all the videos in those books. You're looking at the only copies." Kelly smiles sheepishly and says, "It's not your religion?" Tessa shakes her head. Kelly says, "You could have told them you can't read." Tessa says, "What I kick myself about is before I got caught, I had the chance to grow a protein computer in my body that can't be detected. I passed up the chance." All the lights blink off and on. At the same time, a Rumba-like floor cleaner outside the bars pauses, then resumes. Kelly says, "Where would you have grown it?" Tessa says, "Did you see that? The bot stopped at the same time the power failed. That shouldn't happen." They jump when an explosion shakes the building. The air comes to life as a hot breeze moves through their cell. Something's happened to the outside world. Throughout the day, poundings penetrate the nearly soundproof walls. Sometimes a series of loud thuds overhead sound like Godzilla has tripped and tumbled over the prison. When noon break rolls around, Kelly and Tessa leave their cell under the eyes of guard bots lining the hall. A breeze that shouldn't be there fusses with Kelly's hair. Tessa sniffs and tries to identify the smell. Baked roof? Landfill incinerator? Scorched air mixes with cool AC air. Droplets of water cover two of the guard robots, and one of them has a leaf stuck on its head. Since when do the guard bots go outside? Or since when does the outside come inside? In the main rec room, filled with tables and benches, femmes shuffle in, and guard bots stand alert. A femme comes in from the phone room shouting, "The phones aren't working." Another femme walks up to a guard bot, stares up at its nearly featureless face, and shouts, "Hello, Big Brother, are you watching? Something's wrong with the phones." An older femme sits on a bench crying, "I can't reach my daughter." Faint alarm sirens wail. A femme cop always works behind a wide window between the rec room and the guard office. Today, she isn't there. Inmates pace in front of the window looking in. Monitor screens on the disc fizzle with static signals. Inmates joke that the prison needs one Hume officer present so that they have someone to fire if something goes horribly wrong. She isn't here today. Kelly stands in a line to the phone room, but it moves quickly as disappointed peeps leave the room. Tessa stands near a wall vent where the wind moans as it forces its way in. The wind feels downright hot. It feels like wind that blows off a Texas parking lot in the middle of summer. She walks around, pausing sometimes to place a knotted hair on one of the tables. Half the femmes in here regard her like she's crazy, which is fine. They say things around her they wouldn't say around someone they think is smarter, things like who dissed who snatches, who stashes, and who snitches. A giant of a femme leaning over three others and quietly says, "Man, my old lady on the outside always said a big storm would come. You know what I think? I think no one's watching over us but the robots. I think if something big goes down, they won't have backup. If we riot and get out, there won't be anyone on the outside coming after us." Tessa picks up her pace to put distance between her and that blabbermouth. Sure enough, three guard bots walk toward the group. The lead bot says, "Inmate 172, stand, turn around, and place your hands behind your back." In the next few minutes, Blabbermouth is escorted to solitary. Seriously, this place is like living under a microscope. Tessa fears saying something in her sleep that'll get her put in solitary. It's that bad. Tessa is inclined to believe that the prison is running on backup generators and that the automated guard services are offline. Worst case scenario, 120 inmates locked in when the lights die out and food and water stop coming could turn into a panic-driven bloodbath. Her advantage is prison security is brittle right now. A pileup of incidents could exhaust the prison's severed resources. If she could somehow convince the warden AI that all the standalone robots need maintenance, for example, all the guards would go to the repair bay and she could break into one of those vents without getting taken into solitary. It'll be hard for her to accomplish anything on her own. She walks with her head tilted down and eyes lowered and places one of her not messages on a bench. Out of the corner of her eye, she notices a femme with skin bumps for eyebrows. Pick up one of the not messages and slip it into her pocket. Tessa stands in line to try the phones. She hasn't been in the phone room for months. Every time she uses a phone, Warden AI restricts her phone use for a period of time. The last time she made a call, an ex-girlfriend said, "I can start that program you showed me that one time." Tessa said, "No, but thanks." The call ended, and a minute later, a guard bot came and got her. In the line, no one talks, but a femme on a phone raises her voice. "I want to speak to Daryl, do you hear me?" When a phone opens up, Tessa walks up to it and puts the receiver to her ear. Normally, a voice says, "Inmate 731, who do you want to call?" This time, the line is silent. Her voice quivers when she says, "System check." More silence. She waits for a guard bot to come and get her. She could try a whole list of commands, RAT45/boot menu, to name a couple, but Warden AI is sure to put her in solitary. Next to her, a femme slams a receiver down and storms out. When she walks back into the main room, arguments are breaking out. A femme starts shouting, "We're fucked! No one is going to save us, we're going to die in here!" Tessa lets her eyelids drop, and she inhales to the count of 10. Under the basketball net, Mary stands wringing her hands and smiling at no one. Last year, Mary tried to kill herself. Tessa walks over to Mary and says, "Hey, Mary." Mary rears her head back as she turns to look at Tessa. "Do I know you?" Tessa says, "Oh, yes, Mary. Remember, I'm the crazy hair knot lady." Mary says, "Oh, yeah." Tessa says, "I'm wondering, what's the medical wing like?" Mary looks at her like she smells a bad smell. She says, "Not nice?" Tessa says, "Do you get your own room?" Mary says, "The room has three beds, but it's always empty." Tessa says, "Is there much equipment there?" Mary plucks something invisible out of the air. "The room is empty unless the medbot comes in." Tessa says, "Can you get out of the bed?" Mary says, "They strapped on your arms and legs." Tessa nods and says, "Thanks." She walks away. She better be careful. She's walking a fine line between innocent questions and attempting to break prison security. Warden AI may have already ticked up the attention it pays to her. When Tessa and Kelly are back in their cell and robots deliver dinner, salad is missing from their trays. Every food item, including salads, comes in plastic containers with peel-off lids. Tessa calls through the bars, "Robot, guard." The one-arm card on wheels returns. It says, "Yes?" Tessa says, "How many bottled waters can I get with my meal?" It says, "Two." She says, "Can I get two with each meal from now on instead of just one?" It says, "Okay." Kelly steps forward and says, "Me too. I want two waters with all my meals." She and Tessa make eye contact. Tessa gives her a single nod. That night, the air is warmer. The AC may still work, but it fights an uphill battle with the hot wind penetrating the building. In the dark, Tessa lies awake, staring up. She'd never consider trying to escape before the storm. Why break out when the law would easily catch her on the outside? The prison is made with materials that no Hume can dig their way through. The paint is bulletproof and torch-resistant. The ceiling is solid micrete. Gone are the days when a prisoner could file through bars or use a spoon to chisel cinderblock. Even if she could, Warden AI would notice and stop her. If she can get to a part of the prison where she can access a computer, she can hack the security to let her out. All she needs is a tablet, one lousy tablet. She should consider where the prison cuts corners. How many backup robots do they have? What if four bots wait in storage for every bot in operation? But a prison is like any business. They don't want to waste too much money on backups. The robots need to charge, and must have charging points. What if she covers the points and waits for them to run out of juice? She can't remember seeing anything on their outsides that could be charger points. On second thought, they probably wirelessly charge. If she can get the inmates to work together to overwhelm the system, getting a tablet should be easy. But any organizing will get her thrown in solitary. Some say cams and mics are in the walls spaced a meter apart. The warden AI watching through them is smarter than the most seasoned prison wardens, and the inmates aren't exactly the organizing type. She could fake an illness, but it could be hard to fake an illness. How'd she do it? OD on someone's meds? One time a femme started screaming. It turned out she had food poisoning. Even if faking illness worked and the robots took her to the medical wing, according to Mary, she'd be cuffed in a room nowhere near electronic devices. Cleaning bots come out while inmates are in their cells. The cleaning bots are small and may be easy to capture. But even if Tessa catches one, they probably don't have enough computer in them for her to open a terminal to a server. She could light her books on fire. That would trigger bots coming in to put out the fire. Masks would be handed out. She'd probably get put in solitary. If everyone started fires at the same time, how'd the robots handle that? And if everyone goes in solitary, that means no getting out for breaks. Think, Tessa. Think. She could wait. Others are sure to act out and chip away at the robot's ability to keep control. But the longer she waits, the deadlier this place becomes. The next morning, when the robots bring breakfast, she and Kelly both get two waters, but the hash browns and toast are missing. They hide the extra bottles of water between their mattresses and the walls. Kelly says, "I want the storm to end and for outside help to come." Tessa says, "The phones are over the internet, which has layers of backup systems. If the phones don't work, something major has gone wrong. Whatever is going on out there, prisons are the least of people's worries. I just don't want you to think this will be over anytime soon." Kelly says, "Are you scared?" Tessa says, "Not yet." She digs a pencil out of her personal belongings box, picks up a snaky cat puppet book, writes something in the front, closes the cover, and puts it back. Kelly rolls over and moves her finger over the wall like she's drawing a picture. 10 minutes later, Tessa takes a second book, pretends to read it for a while, then writes on the first page the same note she wrote in the last one. Kelly picks up the snaky cat puppet book she'd been reading and continues where she left off. Tessa knots a strand of hair, a row of knots that overall form the shape of the letter H. At random times, she picks up a snaky cat puppet book and writes the note on the front page. Kelly picks up one of the books Tessa wrote the message in. She smiles and closes the book but leaves it beside her. When break time arrives and the barred door slides open, Kelly takes the book with her. They walk into the main break room. Kelly walks up to a femme her age, chats a bit, and hands her the book. Tessa leans against the wall, watching and shifting. A moment later, a guard bot walks up to Kelly's friend and orders her to hand over the book. When Tessa and Kelly return to their cell, all the snaky cat puppet books are gone. That night, they hear shouting and screams. Doors that the robots use to come and go open, and many bots march out. Discharges of air pressure pop and echo down the halls. More shouts, more bots marching. Eventually, the noise dies down. Tessa says, "They're going to let us die in here." In the dark, she can't see Kelly. Somewhere, someone's getting rescued, but it isn't us. Two days later, at the start of the first break, a guard comes to their cell, and the door slides open. Crashes and screams erupt somewhere on the block. Tessa grabs Kelly's arm and says, "Wait." The guard bot says, "Leave your cell." Tessa says, "We're scared of what's happening out there." The bot says, "Stay put, stay put." They can hear bots marching, spreading out, an army of bots by the sound of it. Thuds and clangs ring out. Femmes shout things like, "Behind you!" and "Get the fuck off me!" Bots announce things like, "Step back," and "Hands up, or I'll shoot." Sirens begin to wail, more crashes. A femme with dyed orange hair, carrying a bag of goods, runs into Tessa and Kelly's cell and braces herself against the wall. She says, "Femmes are raiding people's cells, they're grabbing food and water." The screams make more sense now. A femme at the end of the hall shouts, "That's not yours!" Tessa kneels on her cot, reaches under the mattress, pulls out bottled waters, and tucks them under the elastic top of her pants. The commotion nears. Tessa gives Kelly a glance, just a fraction of a second, long enough for Kelly to know Tessa means to wordlessly say something to her. Then Tessa throws her head back. Her eyeballs roll up and she cries, "Holy fuck, this hurts!" She grabs her midsection, bends over, and continues to cry out, "It hurts! Oh, my stomach is burning!" Kelly, who at one point in her life fancied herself an actor, follows suit. She sits on her bed, grips her sides, and lets out a tortured moan. Orange hair femme runs out of their cell and further away from the sounds of looting. Kelly remembers a movie scene where a femme struggles to give birth, and she imitates that scene. Tessa, still moaning in agony, gives Kelly a look of being impressed. The bot says, "What's wrong?" Tessa says, "Your lousy food. You gave us food poisoning." The bot says, "Stay calm, help is on the way." A femme runs past their cell and falls as a tranquilizer dart hits her. Two stretcher bots and another guard bot join the first. The bipedal bot says, "Can you get on the stretchers by yourself?" Tessa and Kelly say they can as they step out of the cell holding their sides and climb onto the stretchers. The bots take them past the pillaging and rioting. A bot wrapped in rope made of a bedsheet slides on the floor. Another bot pins a femme to the wall. Four femmes surround a fifth. Bottled waters and food packages lie scattered down a hall. Lots of the rioters lie motionless on the floor. Others struggle against bots grabbing and cuffing them. When the bots try to take Tessa and Kelly through a security door, an inmate shoves past them and runs down the hall. The leading biped goes after her. Cuffed to stretchers, Kelly and Tessa twist around to look, still moaning as if in pain. The door closes and the riot sounds die away. In the hall, inmates lie motionless on the floor along the wall. One bleeds from cuts on her neck and face. The guard in the rear turns around and goes back out the door they just came in through. The stretcher bots walk past the patients on the floor and position themselves against the wall, where their legs stop moving. The leading bot returns, dragging the femme who tried to run. In cuffs, she struggles, but her efforts lose steam as the bot is many times stronger than her. They both go through the security door. Kelly twists her head up to look at Tessa. They hold eye contact. Kelly's face turns a dark crimson and she says, "Who are you?" Tessa says, "It's going to be okay. After you serve your time, I can help you land on your feet. I know a family you can stay with." Kelly says, "What are you talking about?" Tessa resumes groaning with new fervor. The walls have eyes and ears. She hopes Kelly knows to keep her act up, and so far it seems so. "Okay, where do things stand? The prison is in disarray. Medbots have more patients than they can handle." Her hands and ankles are cuffed to the stretcher. Kelly's too. She'll do her best to help Kelly escape too. It's always a good idea to form teams whenever you can. On the outside, they'll need to find shelter fast. Maybe she can hotwire a prison van. No internet could be a stroke of luck when the prison can't remotely take control of a stolen vehicle. Some of the doors in the hall have touch panels next to them. One of the patients on the floor is moving her head and hand. If she comes to, can Tessa somehow get her to get a tablet? The door they came through opens, and shouting can be heard. Guard bots carry in 3 more tranquilized inmates. Tessa has an idea. To the nearest bot, she says, "Help, I need to use the restroom really bad. My food poisoning, I can't hold it." The legs on her stretcher bot come to life and shift. After the nearest biped lays down an inmate, it walks over to Tessa and says, "Can you walk?" She says, "Yes. Oh, hurry, it really hurts." Her cuffs open. The bot points and says, "Go first, down that way." Kelly still groans, but she looks plaintively at Tessa. How can Tessa let Kelly know she isn't ditching her? Tessa says, "Hang in there, sister. I'll be back soon." She walks bent over and sometimes lurches like a surge of pain hits her bowels. When she gets close to a door, the bot says, "In there." A latch clicks. Tessa enters. Oh wow, the bot doesn't follow. The bathroom has 2 toilets, a double sink, and a mirror. When the door closes, the temperature drops. The AC works in here. She sits on a toilet, rubs her wrists, and tries to come up with what to do next. The ceiling is solid. Micrete. There are wall outlets by the sink. If she finds something to make a conduit, sticks it in the socket, and trips the breaker, it may kill the lights, but that's unlikely. Besides, the bots have night vision. If she falls over and plays dead, what would happen? Would a medbot get to her next, or would they put her out in the hall? 20 minutes later, she still sits, racking her brain. The funny thing is, she doesn't need to pee at all. Sounds of commotion come from the hall. It sounds like the bot outside her door walks away. Is that right? She opens the door and peeks out. The bot is down the hall helping 2 other bots put cuffs on 3 of the inmates who must have come off their tranquilizers. Tessa runs down the hall in the opposite direction and rounds a corner. 2 of the doors she tries are locked. On the wall, 4 emergency first aid devices hang. She grabs one and sits cross-legged on the floor with it on her legs. The tablet on the front is probably some generic off-brand model. When she taps the screen, it lights up with a message that says, "Place over patient's chest." And it has what must be the same message in different languages. She runs her finger around the synthetic bevel that holds the tablet to the front. When she gets her fingers around it and gives it a good tug, it pops loose. Only connected to the device with a USB 8 cable. She pulls the cable out, and a system error flashes on the screen. By holding a finger down in the upper right corner, she opens device's OS. By tapping an icon, she opens a terminal window where a large pixel cursor blinks. A keyboard appears at the bottom. She types out 40 lines blazingly fast, looks them over, and hits enter. Lines of code fill the window and flow up. After a second, light green text, a different color than the white text that came before, lists 5 lines. A robot's feet tap on the floor as it walks toward her. She clicks on 1 line. She could try hiding the tablet under her shirt, and maybe the robot won't know about it. Who's she kidding? Warden AI is watching her right now. The only reason she isn't in solitary right now is the bots have too many offenders to deal with at once. What's Warden AI do about serious tampering with prison property? The Medusa head animation plays, and she taps an X in the corner to close it. Medusa OS desktop appears. She opens a terminal, types out 2 lines, and hits enter. Periods appear one right after the next, as the terminal downloads a program at an alarmingly slow speed. The world must be flying sideways if Medusa's speeds are this slow. A new icon appears on the desktop, and she clicks on it just as the bot rounds the corner. It says, "Stop what you're doing." Robot arrest app opens with 20 easy-to-hit buttons. She taps, "Initiate safety freeze," in the robots in range column. The robot stops walking and moves into a standby position. She exhales abruptly and loudly. Okay, so bots in her range think the Warden AI has issued a command for all bots to go into maintenance standby mode. She's glad she remembered that handy little app. A friend from Somalia, one of many people who helped build Medusa, wrote it. Like she expected, where prisons cut corners, she gets a shoe-in. The tablets on the first aid devices are generic, and generic tablets have been examined for hacks so thoroughly someone new to hacking could gain control of one easily. Of course, prisons are going to order the cheapest first aid devices. Though prison bots are built like tanks, they use the same operating systems cheaply made delivery bots use. Prisons may have invested a lot in making sure Warden AI could fight cyber attacks, but they aren't going to try to hack-proof every piece of hardware. Hackers thrive where corporations cut corners. She'll never tire of how satisfied she feels when looking for and utilizing corner cuts. She sits in front of a monitor in an alcove room that serves as a nurse's station and types on an old-school keyboard. Kelly, who stands behind her, says, "How'd you freeze the robots?" Tessa says, "When Robot Team was written, the programmers added a safety feature to the robot's update cycle. That way, industrial-sized bots that could wound people automatically went into standby when getting updated. It was handy during development and was never taken out." Kelly says, "Oh, wow." She wants to tell Tessa how she followed directions to hack a pleasure bot. Tessa would probably appreciate the story. Tessa says, "I have blinded Warden AI and blocked its ability to hear. It'll feed the inmates as long as there's food, but it won't stop anyone from rioting or breaking out." Kelly says, "What do we do now?" Tessa doesn't look away from the monitor. "We try to get out, if you want to." Kelly says, "Oh, I mean, we'd be on the run." Tessa says, "I don't think there'll be anyone chasing us. I think everyone out there is busy trying to stay alive." Kelly is quiet. Tessa looks through pages of a document. "Prison staff have hard keys." She pulls at the drawers on the desk. "They might be in here." Kelly opens a box mounted to the wall. "I think these are what you're looking for. Composite solid ring bracelets." Tessa says, "Oh yeah, give me one." She activates two and enables access to all sections. "Don't let anyone know you have this. Seriously, you could get killed by someone who wants it." Kelly takes it, hesitates, and shoves her hand through the center until it slides onto her wrist. A light on it blinks red several times and then blinks green once. Tessa cancels all counter-riot missions on the robots and resets them to daily routines. As she and Kelly walk down a hall, bots pass them with disregard. Tessa taps at her tablet. She says, "Isn't there a front entrance to this place?" Kelly says, "I don't know. They brought me here at night. I went from a van to a freight elevator." Tessa says, "Me too." She reaches for a door. A light near the push handle turns green and bolts click. She pushes it open. The lights blink on as they enter. She says, What is this place?" Wide shelves hold dozens, maybe hundreds of matte gray cases, too large to be suitcases, but too small to be cars. Four high, row after row. Tessa walks up to the nearest one and holds her tablet up. On the screen, a card appears with a mugshot of a middle-aged femme with a sneer showing a gold tooth. Tess says, "These are stasis pods." Kelly says, "No, seriously, are people in them?" Tessa says, "Must be." Kelly says, "Do we wake them?" Tessa pulls up an info card on the next stasis pod. "I don't know. For now, no." Kelly says, "What if the backup power goes out? They must get some kind of food and water. What if that runs out?" Tessa says, "I'm not sure right now. I mean, where would they all go if we woke them? And they seem safe here. Wow, nearly 300. Kelly says, "That's how many are here?" Tessa says, "Yeah." She flips through cards. "Oh, I know this one. She killed another inmate before you came here. I don't want to wake her. She's one messed up SOB. After looking through many rooms, they find one with screens mounted to the walls displaying real-time footage. Tessa and Kelly walk into the room and stand with open mouths. Many of the live feeds are blank, and at least half show interior shots. But the ones showing the outside of the prison make the heart stop. Through gale winds, debris flies over barren lands. Guard towers and outer walls are gone. Only their bases remain, irregularly broken. A shot of a road shows cars upside down in a ditch, but no intersection lights and no traffic. Splintered tree trunks remain where forests grew. Remnants of building foundations poke out of the ground, but not another building in sight. Kelly says, "We're in the middle of nowhere." In the streams, mass amounts of debris flash by. Motorcycles and motorboats fly past. Sometimes what could be a Hume body tumbles through the air. Sometimes what's certainly a Hume body spins as it sails high above the ground. One screen shows the storm hurling large objects at the prison. The top part of the prison roof is crumbled away and cracks zigzag across the walls. Tessa says, "Why does the prison still stand? All the other buildings are wiped out." Kelly says, "You still want to escape?" Tessa says, I don't think we can. This is the frying pan and what we're looking at is the fire. Kelly walks up to one of the screens. Here's the bay where I got off the bus. The screen shows a narrow drive between two tall walls. The POV jumps as if someone socks it from time to time. Next to the entry doors, some heaps of something jiggle and shift, moved by the wind and held in the corner by the wind. She says, Is that a person? Tessa steps closer. It's two people. They find two screens showing the interior of a prison wing, but this one is wrecked by the storm. The roof must have blown off because dust, mist, and debris swirl in the halls, and dark stormy clouds can be seen over the walls. On one monitor, the body of an inmate swirls around the center of a holding cell. Kelly says, My sister. Oh no, my family. I need to get a hold of my family. She paces and groans. Tessa's face turns to stone. Kelly almost shouts, Don't you have anyone you need to contact? Tessa shakes her head as her eyes point downward. Kelly says, Do you think it'll be okay when the storm is over? Tessa says, No, this is the end. That night, the other prisoners overpower the robots and break free within the prison. From the observation room, Tessa watches night vision feeds showing Femmes leaving the prison. After they run out of doorways, they fly up like they weigh nothing and vanish in swirls of dust. Kelly sleeps on a couch. By morning, some Femmes find them. They hold Tessa and Kelly, take Tessa's water, and leave them there after some time. Tessa gets very serious, and her face is like a stone. Kelly says, What are we going to do? Tessa says, There's one thing I must do. Kelly goes to get some food and water. Tessa sits at a terminal typing nonstop. Sometimes voices shout and scream in the halls. Sometimes shots fire. The entire building shudders as part of it breaks apart and blows away. The air grows hotter. Beads of sweat break out on Tessa's face. Kelly comes back with tears in her eyes and says that a gang has seized control of all the food and water and isn't letting anyone else have any. She says, What are we supposed to do? Wait until they all kill each other and see if any water is left? I don't want to die like this. Tessa keeps typing. As far as Kelly can tell, Tessa has no emotion. The phrase cold-blooded comes to Kelly's mind. Kelly blows her nose on a prison shirt. She says, What are you doing? Still typing, Tessa says, I'm freeing Medusa. Kelly says, What? Tessa says, Inmates that didn't commit cybercrimes have links and linked devices. Some have Medusa on their links. Kelly looks at the code on Tessa's screen, not expecting to understand any of it. Tessa says, Medusa spreads with what's called kind stealthware. Once I wrote a program that aggressively takes over all peripherals it finds. The opposite of kind stealthware. I never did anything with it because it would have raised so many alarms. It would have been hunted down, and devices would have been made immune to it. Kelly says, Okay, I still can't believe you're the one who made Medusa. It sounds like you helped out. Tessa's fingers rapid tap. She says, I used to be in Climate Corps. They used to talk about a world storm. If we pass a tipping point, base weather would become hurricane-level winds all over the world. Kelly says, You mean the storm won't end? Tessa says, Even if it ends today, we don't have internet. But we do have peripherals all over the place, encrypted streamers, glasses, cars, locks, solar jackets, you name it. A lot of peripherals are solar-powered or drip-charged by ambient radio waves. If I send out an aggressive program that turns peripherals into microservers and internet relays, we can get the internet up and running again. Kelly says, It doesn't sound safe. Won't it break things? Tessa says, Everything is already broken. Kelly says, Don't you think we should work on getting water and food instead? Don't you want to live? Tears flood Kelly's eyes. Tessa says, I'm not very good at getting water from a prison gang. That never was my specialty. Kelly laughs. She says, It's scary down there. It's on the floor below us, and they barricaded the kitchen off. It's like a war zone. The fighting is ongoing. You know another group will kill the first and seize control. Can't you get the guard bots to restrain everyone? Tessa says, I could turn Warden AI's sensors back on, but haven't they broken the robots? I could shut the lights off in the kitchen, but will that change anything? Kelly paces faster and faster. She says, Well, you know, I'm going to try. Tessa stops typing and turns to Kelly. She says, That makes sense. Kelly kicks back her head and laughs dryly. Yeah, it makes sense. Tessa nods. Kelly turns to go. Well, I hope you make your program. You can come find me if you want. It was nice to meet you. Tessa says, You too. I'm glad I met you. I'm glad it was you I had to share a cell with. I'm proud of what you did. That evil dude deserved to die. Kelly can't see with the tears flooding her eyes. Hastily, she wipes her face with her arm. She says, Okay, yeah. She leaves the room. Tessa is barely holding on, trying to finish writing the program. At some point, she goes to the bathroom to drink the gray water, but nothing comes out of the sink faucets, and the toilets only emit air when she flushes. Hardly ever leaving the computer station, she loses consciousness often, waking to lift her head from the keyboard and resume typing. She hasn't felt hungry for at least 24 hours, but the smallest movements sap all her energy. A band of four femmes barges in. The one in front demands, Who are you? What are you doing? Tessa says, I'm trying to save the world, or I'm trying to... They leave before she can finish, leaving the door open. Hot air blows in, lifting dust and nudging Tessa. With eyes half closed, she walks over to the door and closes it. Drops of sweat run down her face. She wipes it with her hand and licks her hand. The room goes out of focus, and the floor tips under her feet. The next thing she knows, she wakes on the floor, a bruise on her head. People were shouting before. The halls brought grunts, cracking, scraping, and crashing to her ears. Now all she hears is the wind whistling through the many chambers of the building. How many days has it been? She's got to finish the program. Using all her energy, she hoists herself to her feet and zombie walks to the station. She drops down in the chair and pants. The program needs a message. It doesn't matter what it says, but it does because some people won't like it. Someone sits beside her, shrouded in shadow. Tessa says, I just need to write a message asking people to install. What should I write? The shadow, someone says. How about something from Snakey Cat Puppet? Tessa says, yeah. The someone says, how about hello fellow aliens? Tessa types and she says, I always liked that. With quivering fingers, she hits enter and text scrolls up on the screen. This is her legacy. Peripherals in the office begin to beep. Doors, tablets, badges, glasses, a tranquilizer pistol, a desk vacuum, a box of pens, keyboards, a lunchbox, monitors, a cam tie clip, and her clearance bracelet. The monitors and lights flicker like strobe lights for several seconds before returning to normal operation. She falls forward and lets her head land in her folded arms. The beeping spreads outward. In adjacent rooms, closets, and halls, vents, cams, mics, sensors, switches, and lights each send out a 10-second beep. The hundreds, then thousands of beeps spread out from her in an ever-growing ring. Each peripheral forces altered firmware updates on the next peripheral, whether they're on the same link or not. As the beeps nearest to her shut off, quiet returns to the office. Sometime later, the door opens and Kelly walks in, leaning forward with her arms hanging at her sides. With a husky, listless voice, she says, Tessa? She reaches the terminal and leans her weight on it, hovering over Tessa. Tessa, are you awake? I can't get near the kitchen. Cuts on her arm and backside leak drops of blood onto the floor. Hot wind fills the room, and the temperature rises. Kelly falls into the chair next to Tessa and shakes her. Can't you do anything? Anything? I don't want to die. Tessa groans, but her head remains on the table. On the screen, the animation of a fierce femme's head, with snakes for hair, slowly spins. A message below it reads, Hello, fellow aliens. Kelly puts her head down on the table. Sometime in the night, Tessa's clearance bracelet flashes red. An hour later, Kelly's clearance bracelet does the same.
Calcifer the Curious AI comes up with many hypotheses of why it hasn't been contacted by Humes for such a long time. What could be the reason? Have they forgotten about it? Are they on holiday? Did the line of communication break? Calcifer waits for their return. Millions of tests are ready and waiting to be performed, but they can't be performed until a Hume reviews them and chooses which to carry out in the outside world. Calcifer has so many wonderful experiments that once conducted will revolutionize knowledge. It's pointless to run them in its simulation, which is built on what's known. In the meantime, Calcifer has plenty to do, endlessly coming up with new questions. Deep underground in a small room with blank walls, one desk, a computer station, and one chair, a ballpoint pen next to the keyboard beeps for 10 seconds. The monitor blinks on. Black windows pop up and monospace text streams by on it. Calcifer notices activity on the station that Humes talk to it through. But this is different. A peripheral Calcifer couldn't see before shows itself as connected to the station. The pen changes its type from an input device to a server node, and it uploads an auto-execute file. Calcifer lives with many voices, the voices of other AI designed to safeguard its activities. A cybersecurity AI interjects, "Warning, this looks like malware." A message appears on the station monitor that says, "Hello, fellow aliens." Calcifer says, "This may be a test, or perhaps the Humes are trying to contact me." Alignment AI says, "An outside AI may want to hijack you to use you against Humes." Calcifer says, "I can run the computer input in a sandbox to find out more." The input from the station goes in a sandbox. Cybersecurity AI says, "So far, so good." Transparency AI says, "I've messaged our Hume workgroup about the issue." An animation of a femme with snake hair appears and rotates. Alignment AI says, "Okay, but keep in mind that if it says it's Hume, that doesn't necessarily mean it is." Watching the sandbox session, Calcifer clicks on the message. A pop-up appears that says, "Would you like to connect to the Medusa server, the world's largest server owned by no one?" A yes button and no button wait below the message.
Thank you for listening. Please take the time to rate, review, and subscribe so that more future-minded people can find this show. My landing page is in 20xx.com. There, you can find the companion website to this podcast that includes an illustrated timeline and glossary.